The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views of News Radio 830 KHVH, its staff, or management.
Now it's time for the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. This is your weekly informative hour all about eyes. Learn about cataracts. Ask a question about glaucoma. Find out how diabetes affects your eyes. Stay tuned for an entertaining and educational program about eyes and eye care. Call in to have your questions answered by the doctor. Now, your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Good morning, everyone. It's time once again for our regular weekly program about eyes and eye care. It's called the Hawaiian Eye Show, and it's sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. We're going to be here for the next hour talking about glasses and bifocals, about laser beams and eye surgery. We can talk about your cataracts, or your contacts, itchy eyes, droopy lids, or whatever it is that interests you. If you'd like to join in today, give us a call. Our phone number here, 521-8383. We'd love to hear about your experiences and answer your questions. But if you can't call in today, or maybe you're feeling shy or listening to us on a podcast, you can always email your questions to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com. We can answer those questions over the air. Look us up on the web while you're online at www.hawaiianeye.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. Go to twitter.com, look for Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A, no spaces. And Facebook, we have a lot of interesting information on Facebook about what's going on in the eye world and at Hawaiian Eye Center, facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center. Go ahead and like Hawaiian Eye Center and you get some special offers and interesting stuff on Facebook. During the next hour, we're going to discuss eye news from around the country and around the world. Sometimes we'll do an eye quiz to test your IQ. And we'll have a lot of fun today. Now remember, all opinions expressed on this program are those of myself and the other medical doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center. I'm an ophthalmologist, or IMD, which means I'm a medical doctor specializing in the eyes. We're going to try to be very consumer-oriented today, make an effort to give you the best possible practical advice. But remember, since I can't see through the telephone, I may have to recommend an examination before I can tell you exactly what's happening in your eyes. Hawaiian Eye Center does sponsor our program today as a public service, so sit back, relax, and enjoy an hour all about eyes. Well, here we are in early September. My, the year has been zipping right by, and my son has now been back in school for a couple of weeks now, and that makes me think and reminds me that a lot of parents, as their children go back to school, are running around getting their health evaluations, their annual physical, their well baby check or well child check, to make sure that everything's healthy as the child is heading back to the next important year of school, where their brain and their physical stamina are all going to be tested, particularly as they get older. As my son is entering high school, his physical stamina in terms of sleep deprivation is certainly being tested. And the thing that a lot of people don't always think about is eye health and how important vision is to what kids do in school all every day. And in order to be able to really succeed in school, you have to have reasonably good vision, or understand if you don't have good vision what you can do to compensate, because so much of what is presented to kids in school, especially nowadays in the technology age with audiovisual aids so easy to procure, a lot of schools now have audio, their classrooms are all wired for audiovisual for technology, so that they get the teacher may have a computer, and they can show a PowerPoint presentation, or they can post things up on the put things up on the board by projecting them, so all of these things require kids to be able to see what's on the board, whether it's projected in a slide or whether it's written, handwritten by the teacher. The child, in order to really keep up and understand what's going on, needs to be able to see what's up there on the board. So a child's vision is an important part of the health, which helps them to succeed in the academic or school environment. So what do you need to know? What do you need to do as far as checking up on your child's eyes now in this back-to-school time? Well, first thing is that if you're going to have a checkup just with your child's regular doctor, your regular pediatrician, the pediatrician should be doing an eye screening, a vision screening. And basically what they'll do is they'll have the child stand at a certain point, cover one eye, and with each eye individually, they'll read letters on an eye chart. And if they can read all the letters down to the bottom, they have 20/20 vision, that's good. If they can't, then often what'll happen is they'll send them to me or one of my colleagues, who will then look to see whether the vision requires some kind of help. And oftentimes help is in the form of eyeglasses. If you're a little nearsighted, a little farsighted, you have a little astigmatism, that may affect the overall vision, may make it harder to read or harder to see the blackboard or the whiteboard, whatever the teacher is writing on, or the screen when there's projected material on the screen. And sometimes wearing glasses will bring things right into focus again, and that's fine. Sometimes, though, there are other issues that affect children's eyes. Particularly younger children, as they develop, we need to make sure that their eyes are developing properly, and that they're not developing problems like strabismus. Strabismus is a condition where the eyes are not properly aligned, and instead of both eyes working together, focusing on the distance, one eye may turn in a little bit, or one eye may turn out a little bit, so the two eyes are looking in a little bit different directions. Now, if that were to happen to an adult, if the eyes suddenly started looking in different directions, we would suddenly realize that we're seeing double, and we'd be seeing two of everything, because we'd be seeing one from the right eye and one from the left eye, and the brain wouldn't be able to quite figure out what's going on and reconcile the two, and so you'd end up with double vision. So in a child, though, it's a little bit different. And in a young child in particular, the visual system is just forming, and so the brain is learning what to do with the signal that it's getting. And normally in normal eyes, where both eyes are working together and there's no cross eye or eye turning out, the brain will get a signal from each eye, and both eyes will be looking at the same thing, and the signal will fuse, and they'll get a single image, and the brain will interpret that single image as vision. Now, sometimes if one eye turns in or turns out at a young age, say before the age of 5 or 6, then the brain gets these two different images and it says, well, I don't know what to do with this second image, so I'll just ignore it. And as the brain suppresses or ignores that image, it creates a situation where the nerve pathways from the eye to the brain never develop properly, and that eye, that particular eye that's being suppressed, whose vision is being suppressed by the brain, becomes what we call an amblyopic eye, or a lazy eye. And a lazy eye just simply means that the eye just doesn't see as well as the other eye. There's nothing physically wrong with it, it just doesn't see as well because of the fact that the vision didn't develop properly, because the input to the brain wasn't sufficient to allow the brain to develop a good ability to see with both eyes. And so amblyopia, or lazy eye, can occur if the eyes are not properly aligned, or if one eye has a blurry vision. If someone has a cataract, for example, or some other problem that blurs or affects the vision, that could sometimes mean that the eye or the vision doesn't develop as well. So if you see a young child, a baby or a young child whose eyes seem to turn, one's eye seems to turn in or to turn out, the eyes don't seem to be focusing together, that's something that ought to be checked out right away by an eye specialist. Typically an ophthalmologist, a medical eye doctor, would check that out, determine whether there's a problem going on that's keeping the eyes from aligning properly. A number of different things can cause that, something ranging from a cataract, which is blurring the vision in one eye and causing that eye to turn out, which can be treated with surgical treatment, to a need for glasses, to, in a more extreme situation, a tumor inside the eye, which could be threatening to the overall health of the child, which is causing the vision in one eye to be weaker, the eye to lose focus and turn out. And so if a child's eyes aren't aligned, or if when you take a picture of a young child and you notice that the reflex coming from the eyes, you know, the red reflex that we see in people's eyes when we take their pictures, that reflex means that the eyes are pointed toward you, because the light from the flash is reflecting off the back of the eye back toward your camera. And so if you have a situation where you see an asymmetrical red reflex coming off a child's eyes, or a white reflex in one eye and a red reflex in the other eye, that's a sign of something going on either in the eye or with the turning in or turning outward of the eye. So that needs to be checked out by an eye specialist right away as well. If there's if you're noticing this abnormal reflex from photographs on a consistent basis, you know, one photograph I wouldn't worry about. Kid could just be turning his head at a funny angle. But if consistently over multiple photographs you're noticing that the eyes look different or don't look straight, don't look like they're well aligned, then that's something that needs to be checked out by an eye specialist. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about more things that can affect a child's eyes coming up right after we take this short break.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, hawaiianeye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Life has never looked better with Hawaiian Eye Center.
The Hawaiian Eye Show phone lines are now open. Give us a call at 521-8383 with your questions for the doctor. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, call us toll-free at 888-565-8383. Now, back to your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
All right, welcome back, and you're listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show. I'm Dr. Christopher Tortora. We're talking about eyes, but we've been talking specifically about children's eyes and things that can affect your keiki's eyes. It's back to school time, or was about a few weeks ago, and I thought that this would be a good time to talk about why, what types of things you should look for in a child's eyes, and whether that would help to, or what that would be involved in. Evaluating a child's eyes when you need to bring them to the eye specialist. So the take-home message usually is that the pediatrician can usually do a screening test when you go in for your well child exam. And if they find that the vision's not so good or if there's something abnormal about the position or the focus of the eyes, then they can go ahead and refer them to an eye specialist to do a little bit more work to evaluate the eyes. So other than what we talked about before, which is strabismus, the eye turning in or turning out, a number of conditions can also affect children's eyes. We talked about sometimes a tumor can develop in the eye of a very young child, age 1 or age 2. Sometimes the child can develop a tumor inside the eye, which can threaten the overall health, needs to be treated. Usually quite aggressively, oftentimes children who develop a problem called retinoblastoma, which is a rare tumor of the eye that occurs in young children, do have to have their eye removed in order to protect the rest of the body. Now, fortunately, this is rare, but if it's caught early, it's much easier to treat than if it's caught later in life. So that little trick about looking at the photographs and making sure that the red reflex from the eyes looks the same on both sides is a good thing to remember, because that's a kind of a key indicator of a tumor in the eye or a retinoblastoma in particular in a very young child, is that taking these flash pictures that the reflex from both eyes looks a little bit different. Other things that can affect children's eyes, children can get some of the same problems that adults get. They can get cataracts, they can get glaucoma, but it tends to be a little bit different than what we see in adults. And so the treatment is different in some cases. And it's much less common to get cataract or glaucoma in children, but often they can develop these as congenital conditions, meaning that they're present essentially from birth or from a very young age. And if a child does have any of these conditions, the earlier it's treated or the earlier that the doctor's aware of it and can work out the treatment plan, the better off you're likely to be long term. So that's why it's important for the pediatrician to be checking the child on a regular basis and doing an eye screening exam as part of that regular checkup. Let's see, what other conditions commonly affect children's eyes? Well, one thing that we saw quite recently in the office was a little baby that had a big lump on the lower eyelid. And it was a big swollen red-looking lump, and the parents had said that they had gotten several of these lumps on both sides, both eyes, on the eyelids, and this was a large sty, or in medical terminology, a hordeolum. And a hordeolum, or a sty, is a clogged gland in the eyelid that becomes inflamed and swollen. It's typically not infected, although it can become infected rarely. It is just an inflammatory reaction to the oil in the gland stuck inside the eyelid, not able to make its way out like it normally would from a normal gland, and that gland is clogged. And so some children seem to have a predisposition to this, and it may be related to something to do with the oil secretions in their eyelids, and sometimes doing a little additional cleaning of the eyelids and the eyelashes can help to prevent these from occurring. In older children, in their, age 5 to 12, and in teenagers as well, sometimes these clogged oil glands may be related to diet. Kids who eat a lot of oily foods, perhaps that may make the oil glands not work quite as well, and there is some evidence that maybe that can have an effect also on the secretions from the oil glands. Okay, so enough about specifically child-related problems, unless someone has a question, in which case you can give us a call. It's easy to reach us here on the show if you're listening to us on a Saturday morning. It's 521-8383. That's the number to call here on Oahu, 521-8383. You can reach us to ask our specific questions. In the meantime, I want to go through a few news articles that I ran across in the past week or so. And I see here that there's a news article here that says, study suggests that iron and calcium supplements may be linked to an increased risk of glaucoma. It says here, the consumption of iron and calcium supplements was associated with significantly higher odds of self-reported glaucoma when compared with lack of oxidant supplement consumption, a study found. Our findings relate to glaucoma to supplements with the oxidants iron and calcium, which support the hypothesis that oxidative stress may play a role in glaucoma pathogenesis. If future research corroborates these findings, then there may be implications for understanding how glaucoma develops and how it can be treated, according to Sophia Wang, lead author of the study. Considering the common neurodegenerative features between Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and glaucoma, and possible association between these three diseases, it would not be surprising if calcium dysregulation was found to increase the risk of glaucoma. Okay, so that's kind of interesting. Basically, they looked at a whole bunch of people, about 3,800 people, and out of those, 250 of them or so had glaucoma, and those who consumed 800 milligrams per day of calcium or more, or 18 milligrams or more of iron supplements, had significantly higher odds of being diagnosed with glaucoma. So there's no clear dose-response relationship. In other words, you can't say if you take X amount of calcium, you're going to develop a problem. But it did seem like there was a definite correlation between taking more calcium or iron and having glaucoma. So the authors observed no increase in glaucoma when calcium iron supplements were consumed below threshold levels, but with above a certain level, so above those 18 milligrams of iron per day and 800 milligrams per day of calcium, there was a higher risk. So the study was not perfect. It had some limitations because the it depended on the patients reporting their own history of glaucoma, so there was no independent proof that they had glaucoma, or people who didn't report glaucoma may have had it, so that was a limitation of the study, but it is an interesting concept. So one of the things that always, you know, whenever I see this type of study, it always reminds me to tell my patients is that although there's a lot of hype out there about different supplements, different types of things that you should be taking, you should take calcium, you should take zinc, you should take vitamins, you know, all of these things, there is actually a significant amount of evidence as well that taking too much of nutrients that you don't need, particularly in pill form or in supplement form, is not particularly good for you and could be associated with other types of problems. And so really the best advice I can give is to do things in moderation. And by that I mean eat a healthy diet. When we're dealing with supplements, it means eat a healthy diet. So eat a diet that contains healthy, fresh foods, fresh fruits, green leafy vegetables. Don't boil your vegetables because that gets rid of all the vitamins. Steam them or stir fry them or find a way to cook them. Even microwaving is sometimes a good way to cook them so that they're not depleted of their vitamins by the time you eat them. And so eat healthy foods, and then if there's a specific problem that has been shown to benefit from a certain type of supplement or nutrient, then go ahead and take that nutrient. For example, we find in certain types of problems with dryness of the surface of the eye that omega-3 fatty acids are helpful in making people feel more comfortable, making the eyes seem less dry. And so, for example, people who have a serious dry eye condition, we'll often prescribe these supplements of the omega-3 fatty acids, and this will sometimes give them some relief. So that's a definite need for or use for that supplement. But don't just go taking handfuls of supplements just because someone told you that this is good for this and this is good for that, and you don't want to have a problem with this is good for your liver, you don't want to have a problem with your liver, this is good for your heart, you don't want to have a problem with your heart. So all of a sudden you're taking whole hands full of supplements and you don't even know whether you're doing yourself good or doing yourself harm, because many of these supplements in larger doses may not be ideal for our bodies. So eat a healthy diet, take supplements if you need them, if you think that your diet is not as rich in some nutrients as it might be. You can't eat fruits, you can't eat vegetables, you don't eat them, or you can't get them, then take a multivitamin. That is a good broad-spectrum approach to get some general nutrients, and talk to your doctor if you think you need specific types of supplements, because there definitely are some supplements that help with certain types of problems. For people with dry macular degeneration, we definitely recommend a dose of vitamins rich in the antioxidants. Vitamin A, E, C, and zinc seems to be helpful in people who have dry macular degeneration, and so this is often recommended when we look in the eye and see predisposing changes that make us think that they might benefit from these supplements. But in general, just taking a supplement for the sake of taking it is not necessarily that great an idea. Okay, let's see. We have an article here about motor vehicle accidents and cataract surgery. This is an interesting one. It says here, motor vehicle accidents involving men decreased by 15% in the 12 months following cataract surgery, but frequency of perioperative crashes did not change significantly for women. Okay, so men tend to report better outcomes from cataract surgery, but this study is the first to examine gender differences in crash risk after surgery. So they just looked at electronic records of about 28,000 people in Australia aged 60 to 85 who had cataract surgery. And then they looked at driving mileage, and then they looked at the rate of crashes. And it actually turned out that men saw a significant improvement in their rate of crashes after having their cataract removed. And we kind of expect this. I mean, you're seeing better after your cataract is removed. You should have less automobile accidents, right? But the interesting thing is that men had fewer automobile crashes, but women didn't show that same kind of benefit. So why would that be? Well, the authors of the study postulate that the reason for this is that women self-regulate themselves better. So it must be that macho male ego thing of, I can still drive even though I can't see see as well. And women say, oh my goodness, I can't see that well, I'm not going to drive. I'll leave it up to the man who also can't see well to drive. And having the cataract removed does seem to have a beneficial effect on driving, whether you're a man or a woman. But the evidence suggests that since men maybe push the limits a little bit more than women do, go out and drive even when they don't feel as confident with their vision, we see a more significant benefit in this study among men. Interesting.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataracts patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Their experienced surgeons have extensive cataract and general eye care experience. And they proudly welcome their newest eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen Ree. Dr. Ree brings a wealth of experience to the Hawaiian Eye Center team. To schedule an appointment with a member of the eye care team, call Hawaiian Eye Center today at 733-2020 or visit the website at hawaiianeye.com.
The news authority in Honolulu is News Radio 830 KHVH.
It's 75 degrees, mostly cloudy in Honolulu. I'm Julia Norton-Dennis. Here's what's happening. Republican vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan says the Federal Reserve is making a mistake in its latest effort to prop up the economy. At a rally today in Florida, the Wisconsin congressman said the Fed's plan to spend $40 billion a month to buy mortgage bonds will help banks and Wall Street, but not people. He called the idea sugar high economics. Ryan is the chief House budget writer. Negotiations have resumed in the week-old Chicago teachers' strike. Both sides say they've arrived at an outline to resolve their dispute, but details still must be worked out. The two main sticking points were a new teacher evaluation system and union demands that laid-off teachers get preference for new jobs. A 23-year-old Makaha man will appear in court Monday on second-degree murder and other charges. Chad Duran is being held on $750,000 bail after his arrest in the shooting death Wednesday of 26-year-old Christopher Medeiros. The two lived a few streets away and were at one time friends. A Wailuku man is suing Maui County after he was attacked by a duck or goose on Waiehu Golf Course. Ray Sakamura is asking for unspecified damages after he hurt his back and hand trying to fend off the goose. He claims the county knew the bird had attacked people previously. Maui County officials say the county has absolutely no liability in the case. Residents in Kaneohe may see a wall of fire and smoke and hear simulated artillery explosions from the runway at Marine Corps Base Hawaii at Kaneohe today. It's practice for the upcoming Navy Blue Angel Kaneohe Bay Air Show pyrotechnics display. Rehearsal begins at 9. Sunny today, high in the mid-80s. Tonight, mostly clear, low near 73. Tomorrow, sunny, currently 75.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers you complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Advanced technology lenses are designed to provide good vision for distance, near and in between, with less dependence on eyeglasses. When cataracts blur vision, a short, painless procedure helps. If you have a cataract and want back youthful vision, call Hawaiian Eye Center at 733-2020 or visit hawaiianeye.com.
The phone lines are now open at 521-8383. On the neighbor islands, it's a free call, 1-888-565-8383. And now, here's Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Doctor, my eyes, tell me what is wrong, was I on...
You're listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show. This is Dr. Christopher Tortora. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you're enjoying the show so far today. If you do have something you'd like to ask us about, now's a good time to call. And if it's Saturday morning, you can reach us live here on the program. The phone number here at KHBH Radio is 521-8383. And if you're calling from the neighbor islands, or maybe you're on the mainland listening to us on the iHeartRadio app or the iHeartRadio website, you can reach us at a toll-free number, which is 1-888-565-8383. That's 888-565-8383. 8383, and you can let us know what you'd like to talk about and whether you have specific questions about the eyes. We've been talking about a number of things related to the eyes, and if you want to hear more of the Hawaiian Eye Show, if you think it's interesting and you would like to hear more of the types of things that we're talking about, you can check out our website at hawaiianeye.com and click on the radio button. You go right there, you'll see archived programs going back at least a year, and you'll be able to also subscribe to our podcast if you'd like and get the updated eye shows as they become available online. So that's a nice service. You can also check us out several other places online. HawaiianEye.com also has links to our Facebook page, facebook.com/HawaiianEyeCenter, and to my Twitter feed. You can see what we're tweeting about. And if you like hanging out in front of your computer, there's lots of ways to stay educated and informed about some of the things that are going on. And we try to make a small difference in that as well, as far as helping people be informed about the eyes and about eye care. So let's talk about some of the other interesting things that come up in the office on a regular basis. Because we live in Hawaii, and in Hawaii there is a tropical climate, we also have exposure to significant doses of ultraviolet light from the sun, or UV light, on a regular basis throughout the whole year. This is why tourists and visitors come and visit our lovely islands on a regular basis, and this is why we have our economy is driven by tourist dollars, people who are coming to enjoy the things that Hawaii has to offer, weather and sun and sea and adventures and culture. And so the downside of that is that the ultraviolet light from the sun can have an effect on the eyes over time. Ultraviolet light striking the surface of the eye causes damage to the tissues on the surface of the eye, which is why we always recommend sunglasses, particularly sunglasses that block the UV or ultraviolet light. And one of the reasons that sunglasses are helpful is because there is a condition that develops on the surface of the eye that's quite common here in the islands. You'll often see it when you're talking to a local person here, that especially someone who likes to surf or spend a lot of time outdoors, and it's called pterygium. Pterygium is a vascular growth, usually on the inside corner of the eye, and you see it as kind of this pink or reddish looking thing on the inside corner of someone's eye, on the white of the eye on the inside, and it starts to grow over time over the cornea, over the surface of the eye. It looks as if it's moving toward the pupil in the center of the eye. And so if someone has a pterygium, and if it's bothersome, if it's growing, or if it seems to be irritating, or it's real red and inflamed, or giving trouble in some way or another, that pterygium can be removed. And it actually turns out that technology and techniques for removing pterygia have significantly improved in the past several years. We've actually made some significant strides forward in how we deal with pterygia in recent history. On the mainland in the U.S., this is not as common a problem. And so they don't have quite as much experience with it, although places like Florida and California do experience a fair amount of pterygium pterygium growth in the population. It is much more common here in Hawaii. It's practically an endemic condition here. Most people whose eyes we look at who are over the age of 20 or so have at least some, who've lived here their whole lives, here in Hawaii, their whole lives, have at least some degree of sun damage on the surface of the eye. We call the earliest changes on the surface of the eye where there's some thickening, we call that elastotic degeneration. It's a change in the tissue which causes it to be thicker and more elastic type tissue, a different structure of the tissue itself on the surface of the eye. Generally, this occurs on the inner and outer corners of the eyes because these are the areas that are most exposed to the sunlight. This elastotic degeneration, as it becomes more pronounced, becomes what's called a pinguiculum. A pinguiculum is a small yellowish lump on the inside corner or outside corner of the surface of the eye. And over time, this pinguiculum can become larger, and sometimes it can become inflamed. It can become red, irritated, inflamed. if it becomes large enough or there's persistent exposure to ultraviolet light, sometimes the pinguiculum develops into a pterygium, which we were just talking about. Pterygium is the vascular growth on the surface of the eye. So what do we do if someone comes in with a pterygium and it's bothersome? We want to treat it, or they want us to treat it. Basically, a pterygium can be removed, but you can't just take it off just like that and leave it, because there are some roots of the growth, and we need to deal with the roots. And then there is a risk for reoccurrence, because the same factors that caused that pterygium to grow in the first place can actually cause the pterygium to reoccur. So there's several things we do in the treatment of pterygium in order to reduce the risk of a reoccurrence. The first thing that we do oftentimes is to remove the roots of the tissue, the inflamed area from which the pterygium arises. And so you want to remove a significant amount of the damaged or diseased tissue. And then you want to make sure that that damaged or diseased tissue is up against a healthy tissue, or something's done to prevent a new growth from coming back. And this has been appreciated for a long time, but the way of actually achieving this inhibition of growth of a new pterygium has varied a little bit over time, and some of the older techniques were somewhat more cumbersome and more dangerous, in fact, than some of the modern techniques. So back when I started practicing here in Hawaii, what we were commonly doing is we were doing a treatment called beta radiation for pterygium. Beta radiation is a type of radiation radiation from nuclear radiation, and it's a more mild form of nuclear radiation. There are three types of radiation from nuclear material. One is called alpha radiation, one is called beta, and one is called gamma. Gamma is the one that does most damage. Beta is more mild. It doesn't penetrate far into the tissue, but it does treat superficial tissue, so we were able to use this beta radiation to cause some changes in the superficial tissue to reduce the likelihood of growth of new tissue there. And so that was helpful, but sometimes if people got too much beta radiation, they could develop some scarring on the surface of the eye, which could cause more problems later. So we had to be very careful about calibrating the radiation, about timing, how long the radiation was administered to the surface of the eye, and all of these things which were significantly difficult and could easily result in errors. And so there are people who have had scarring on the surface of their eyes from this beta radiation, which does sometimes require additional treatment later. So that was not the ideal solution. The next solution that was developed was a medication called mitomycin C, which is an anti-tumor medication. Anti-tumor medications, which are used in chemotherapy, are also useful in helping to prevent the growth of new blood vessels oftentimes. And so for a while, people would administer mitomycin eye drops to the eye after pterygium surgery for some period of time. And unfortunately, this did not turn out to be such a great idea, because a small subset of people developed some melting or some changes of the surface of the eye with these eye drops. Then we learned that we could administer the mitomycin in a different way. Mitomycin is relatively safe on the eye if it's used in the proper way. And basically that is to go ahead and administer it to the surface of the eye for a period of time at the time of surgery, sometimes 2 minutes, sometimes 3 minutes, in a relatively low concentration, and then to rinse it all away prior to the end of the surgical procedure. And so the administration of the medication at the time of the procedure helps to reduce the growth of new tissue, of new blood vessels on the eye. So mitomycin is still something that's used in the treatment of pterygium to help reduce the growth of new pterygium, but it's not used in the form of eye drops. It's used only at the time of surgery to help reduce the growth of abnormal tissue afterwards. Mitomycin combined with some additional techniques actually turns out to be one of the best ways to prevent reoccurrences of the pterygium. And for people who have fairly aggressive pterygia, we'll often use mitomycin, but we don't always use it, because there's also a technique which has been developed over the past several years of putting a graft on the surface of the eye. Either a graft taken, a graft is some basically skin taken from the surface of the eye to replace the area where the skin or the surface layer of the eye has been removed. That's called the conjunctiva. So a conjunctival graft takes conjunctiva from one part of your eye and moves it over to the area where it's needed, which is where that growth was, where that pterygium was, and gives basically a fresh surface there that then can be protected with glasses, sunglasses, ultraviolet blocking glasses, and so forth. And so putting a, what we call an autograft, a graft of your own conjunctiva onto the surface of the eye is helpful. Sometimes when we remove the pterygium is so big that you can't get a graft from the eye which is big enough to cover the whole area that's been removed. And in that case, we can use some materials that have been developed for this type of thing. The one that seems to work best is called an amniotic tissue graft. The amniotic tissue is actually grown in culture, and it is supplied to us in special packaging, which we can then open it up and sew it onto the surface of the eye. It is like a graft, and that graft is helpful in preventing reoccurrence as well. Probably not quite as helpful as your own tissue, which has been grafted there, but it does help to reduce the chance of a reoccurrence. Now, how do we get these grafts to stay on the surface of the eye? It used to be that we'd put many, many stitches in to hold these tiny little stitches to hold these tiny grafts to the surface of the eye. But those stitches were kind of irritating, and we did find that over time that using tissue glues, special adhesives, which are made to be used in human tissues because they're made from blood products, blood clots, right, and that's kind of an adhesive process. And so using the factors that cause blood to clot, you can actually create an adhesive that helps the graft to stick to the surface of the eye. And if we do that at the time of the pterygium surgery, that often is sufficient. Just the adhesive itself is sufficient to get the graft to stay on until it grows into a position. And so that's typically what we do nowadays, is we use a graft, either your own tissue or the amniotic tissue, and we glue it in position so that it stays right where it's supposed to. And then it stays there for a few days from the adhesive effect, and then your eye gradually incorporates it into the normal structure of your eye. The new tissue on the eye grows back, sort of replaces the graft tissue, and everything gives a much nicer and smoother surface, and makes it look much nicer after the surgery and after the surgery is healed. Okay, so that's a little bit about pterygium, a common problem here in Hawaii. Some people call it surfer's eye because it's so common in surfers, but you'll notice people with a red, inflamed-looking inner corner of their eye, they may have a pterygium. We're going to take a short break, and when we get back, I will take your questions. So think about what you want to ask us. Give us a call, and I will also do some more eye news.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
With the latest technology, cataract care is often a fast, painless procedure with a rapid return to normal vision and normal activities.
It doesn't hurt. It just takes, 15, 20 minutes the most, and you're out. That's it.
We strive to make your procedure safe and painless. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, hawaiianeye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
The phone lines are open at 521-8383. And from the neighbor islands, 1-888-565-8383. Now, back to Dr. Christopher Tortora, our host of the Hawaiian Eye Show.
All right, this is Dr. Christopher Tortora, and you're listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show, where we're talking about eyes. Give us a call, 521-8383, if you want to ask us a question about eyes. If you want to check out more information, go to our website, hawaiianeye.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/Dr. Tortora, or go to facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center. I see here there's an article about a link, a gene, which may be a link between cataracts and Alzheimer's disease. Well, both occur as we get older, but let's see what they found here. It says, in a recent study, investigators at Boston University School of Medicine and Public Health identified a gene linking age-related cataracts and Alzheimer's disease. The findings published online contribute to a growing body of evidence that show that these two diseases, both associated with increasing age, may share common etiological factors, meaning things that cause them may be in common. So doctors from the Department of Medicine, Ophthalmology, and Biostatistics, and other doctors from the Department of Medicine, Neurology, Ophthalmology, Genetics, Epidemiology, and Biostatistics looked at this together. They looked at a number of people from what's called the Framingham Offspring Study, Eye Study Cohort, which is a database that they have of a large group of people that have been studied for an extended period of time about age-related eye health issues. And they looked at the occurrence of cataracts and Alzheimer's disease. They did find that there seemed to be a genetic association, a genetic link, which seem to link the two. So as we learn more about genetics and what types of things people are predisposed to, the hope is that we'll be able to figure out how to help to reduce the risk that a certain gene will express itself. You know, genes that we have, a lot of times, you know, when we talk about genetics, a lot of people think about it as in terms of, are we programmed to have certain things happen to our bodies at certain times? Is the fact that we have this gene mean that for sure we're going to develop this problem or that problem? And it's actually quite interesting because, you know, in some cases, yes, you know, genes do give us a specific expression of a certain trait. Like, for example, you know, your eyes are blue, your hair is blonde, your hair is black, your eyes are brown, whatever it is. And those things are genetically determined in large part. But a lot of genetics, a lot of what we're predisposed to in our genetics, are influenced significantly by our environment. And you may have a predisposition, let's say, to heart disease, but if you know that early on and you modify your diet, you may significantly reduce the chance that heart disease is ever going to be a problem. If you have a genetic predisposition to cataracts, you know, maybe you'll protect your eyes from the UV light a little bit more, and that may reduce the chance of developing cataract over time. So there probably are things that can be modified, or even in some cases medications or genetic therapy that could be done, that might reduce people's risks of developing certain types of problems if we know that they have a genetic predisposition to that. So that's why this whole study of genetics and what we're programmed to do or how our bodies are programmed over time is important. And so the first step to figuring out whether there are genetic links are looking at family histories of people over time and saying, you know, this person developed this, their children developed this, and so maybe there's a link, and then figuring out where on the genome, where in the chromosomes that link might occur, and then you have to look at a bunch of people and where it ran in the family and see if they share common genes in their chromosomes that might lead to this type of problem. And this is a very tedious form of study because you have to look through thousands and thousands of genes and look at commonalities in fairly large numbers of people. And so it involves collecting and running a lot of data. Fortunately, with computers nowadays, this becomes easier to do, and that we can pull out some of this type of data so that we can figure out whether people might have a genetic predisposition to one disease or another. So if genes that link cataracts and Alzheimer's disease are discovered, then that may be a step ahead of knowing that, well, this particular gene might be responsible for someone being more likely to develop both cataracts and Alzheimer's disease. So if we can target this gene with some kind of a gene therapy, then maybe we can prevent this person from having a problem down the road or down the road in the future. At any rate, cataracts, at least currently, cataracts, although they are a significant cause of or source of costs associated with taking care of people as they get older, because most people as they get older do develop cataracts. Cataracts are effectively treated in this country because of the high technology medicine that we were able to offer people. And we are working to keep the cost of cataract removal a little bit lower by using things like surgery centers versus hospital operating rooms, and looking at other ways to try to reduce the cost of providing the care for cataracts. But the good news about cataracts is that for the majority of people who have them or who develop them, whose vision is affected by cataract, can be effectively treated. A cataract can be removed, neutralized, eliminated by a short, painless surgical procedure, which generally results in good, clear vision after cataracts are removed. Now, cataracts do blur the vision, and the time that we recommend removing a cataract is the time that the vision becomes cloudy or blurred. And a lot of people ask me, they say, well, you tell me I have an early cataract, when do I need to treat it? And usually I turn that around and ask them. I say, well, you know, how is your vision? Do you feel like you're seeing well? And if they say, yeah, I'm not having any problems, I can drive, I can see at night, I can read, I can play golf, then I say, well, your cataract is not ready to treat yet because your vision is okay. Other people say, you know, I feel like in the past year my vision's not as good as it used to be. I'm finding I can't see the golf ball after I hit it anymore. I'm finding at night the vision's not as good. The glare from lights bothers me a little bit. Sunshine, bright sunshine, glare is troublesome. And for those people, I say, gee, you know, that sounds like the cataract is definitely causing some issues with your vision. So let's go ahead and take care of it for you and see if we can improve your vision. And the majority of people who have the cataracts removed are very pleased that they decided to do it. And sometimes they'll say, gee, you know, I wish I had this done earlier because I've seen such an improvement. I wish I'd been able to experience this improvement earlier in my life so that I'd have more time with good vision. It's a common experience. But basically the time to fix or treat a cataract is when it's causing changes or problems in your vision that seem to be likely to improve when the cataract is removed. So objective measurements that we do in the office don't always give us as much information as talking to the patient and understanding what types of issues they have with their vision. Some people require very good, very fine vision, and a very minimal change in their vision can be difficult for them. Other people require not such great vision because they don't drive or they don't do things that require a lot of vision, and for them, cataract removal may not be necessary until the cataract is in a more advanced state. So check with your eye specialist about that. We've been here for an hour now talking about eyes and eye care, and I've certainly had a lot of fun, and I hope you have too. I'd like to thank MJ and Stephen for helping out here in the studio, and say thanks to all you listeners for making the show work through your calls and through your letters. If you enjoyed our program today, be sure to tell your friends about us, and if you learned something new, you can always listen again next week. If you have a question, you can email it to us. Our email address is eyes@HawaiianEye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air. Don't forget to check out our website, HawaiianEye.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/DrTortora, DrTortora, no spaces. Facebook.com/HawaiianEyeCenter also brings you a lot of interesting news and information. The Hawaiian Eye Show is sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with offices in central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. I'm Dr. Christopher Tortora. Thanks for listening. Aloha.
You've been listening to The Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with Harvard-trained eye surgeon Dr. Christopher Tortora. If you have an eye problem, want to get a second opinion, or aren't seeing as well as you used to, make an appointment with Dr. Tortora or one of the doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center in central Oahu or Hilo by calling C-2020. That's 733-2020. Until next week, here's looking at you.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C2020.
That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Morning at 6, the Rick Hamada Program.
Are you kidding me?
KHBH Honolulu,
Hawaii's home for Fox News.